We're at the Pesach, which means that we were set free. Now we're free. So, number one should be, after coming out of Mitzrayim, appreciating the freedom and utilizing it. So, let's analyze a little bit what it means to be free, and then understand what it really means for us. So first of all, okay, freedom. Freedom is a very nice thing, it's a very important thing. Every country celebrates its Independence Day. But what is there really to it? If we think about it a little bit, freedom per se, independence per se, seems like a very, very basic advantage. It doesn't really get you where you need to get. When you're free to do what you want to do. But does freedom guarantee happiness? When people talk about happiness, they don't talk in terms of freedom. You ask a person in today's world, what do you describe as the characteristics of happiness? You might say well, you might say health, whatever else will say. Most people won't say freedom. Well, it's because we're so used to being free. But besides that, the truth is, when you think about it a little bit, what is freedom? Freedom means that now you can start trying to get happy. There's nobody on top of you. You're free to do what you want. And now you can try to be happy. You can try to attain happiness. But from there to actually being happy or being successful, oh, there's a lot in the way. You heard all this just the other day. There'll be a review. Still a way to go. Now you're free. Okay. Let's take. What happened in the States? Right? The blacks were set free. They automatically turned into successful people. Had a way to go, right? There was a lot to be studied before they could a lot to be achieved before you can actually go from being free. That's it. You're not a slave anymore. Now you are on your own. But that's it. You're in the cold. And now, you want to become successful. You want to become rich. You want to become powerful. Whether we're talking on national terms or we're talking on the personal terms, there's an awful lot that might not depend on you. A free man might be a miserable man. If he can't succeed in any of the things he wants to do, he's struggling his whole life, trying to make money. Or, let's say a nation, a colony becomes independent of England. Now, from there to success, okay, now they're a poor country, right? There's not much to them. From there to success, they depend on a million things, right? Are they going to manage to build a proper military? Are they going to manage to build a proper economy? They might just end up being a pathetic nation. Yeah, free, there are a lot of free countries that never really amounted to much. So what's so great about being free? We have to understand that when we're talking in terms of chelus, in terms of the freedom that we actually gained from Mitzrayim, the fact that the Torah makes such a big deal about it, and the fact that we celebrate it to such an extent, shows that there is something fundamental about being free. So let's understand it. And I'll begin by citing the name of a certain book about the Holocaust. Not a very happy book. I mean, when I was a kid, my mother only let us read it on Tisha B'Av. A book called The Unconquerable Spirit. Anybody familiar with the book? The Unconquerable Spirit. This is a little bit of a hint of where we're getting at. Think about the title a little bit. What are they saying? What they're saying is, in this title, sure, the Jews were persecuted and oppressed and put through an awful lot, but their spirit couldn't be conquered. That was something that the Nazis never were able to actually conquer and subjugate and destroy. Okay, so we kind of have our answer in poetic terms. Freedom for us means freedom of the spirit. Okay? If we will suffice with poetic terms, then there you have it. That sounds spiritual, flowery, great. That's right. We gained freedom of the spirit, and now we are truly free. Now that really is the answer, but what is that answer on a practical level? How are we to enjoy that freedom and appreciate that freedom in every step and moment of our life? So, I'll begin. Oh, thank you very much. I'm going to begin with two incidents. Oh, is that, you hear me better? I hear myself. Perfect. Thank you very much. I'll begin with two incidents, two little episodes, which, if you've been hearing me, you probably heard me tell these in the past, but I'm going to repeat them again. Worth repeating. There was a Rebbe, a Chassidish Rebbe, who used to teach his Talmidim every day, taught Shiurim in the Beis Medrash. And one day he came very late. He came about an hour late to the Beis Medrash. And the Talmidim were very surprised. It wasn't his style. And he walked into the Beis Medrash and he told the Chassidim, "You know why I'm late? Why is the Rebbe late? Because Hashem spoke to me this morning." Ooh. All the Chassidim gathered round to hear the story. Right? Hashem spoke to the Rebbe this morning. The Rebbe is about to confess it with his own mouth. Right? They always knew it. And now we have the Rebbe is about to tell it to them himself. They gather round to hear. And what's the story? I said, "Well, when I was ready to leave my house this morning, I couldn't find my shoe. And I spent an hour looking for it. It wasn't anywhere. It wasn't in the closet. It wasn't under the bed. I searched and searched and searched and searched. I couldn't find my shoe." Okay. Then after an hour, I found it. I put it on and I came. And now I'm here an hour late because I couldn't find my shoe for an hour. All right. So, see them waiting for the punchline. Where did Hashem speak to you? Where did Hashem come into this? So he said, "No, that's what Hashem told me." "What do you mean?" "Hashem told me this morning, he had a message for me. I want you to search for your shoe for an hour. That was apparently Hashem's message to me this morning, and therefore, I went about Hashem's command to me enthusiastically, and I searched for my shoe for an hour. Now that I found it, I came to this message." What's he saying? So this is obviously an amusing incident. We can assume that the Chassidim were a bit let down. But what's he saying? There's a very, very profound point being made here, whether the story is true or not. Person can't find his shoe, and he has a whole day ahead of him. That's an impediment. Right? That's stopping him from doing what he needs to do. It's getting in his way. Unless he understands that there's actually a mission that he's being charged with right now. What the significance of that mission is? Thank you. Perfect. What the significance of that mission is? You don't know. But? Yeah, perfect. But Hashem himself is coming and telling you, "I want you to be searching for your shoe now for an hour." Hashem is coming and telling you that. You understand that there's an awful lot of significance to it. This is a mission. To be done with enthusiasm. To be done with passion. If you don't know how long it's going to be, I didn't tell him for an hour. The only message he got is that you got to spend time looking for your shoe. You didn't know if it's going to be 5 minutes or half the day. So yeah, sure. If you had a whole day planned ahead of you, and then as you're ready to step out of the house, you mamish get a prophecy from Hashem telling you, "Yes, I know that you had a day of learning planned, but there's something very important for you to do." Hashem gave interesting missions to the Nevi'im. One time he told Yechezkel, "I want you to lie on your side for 45 days. Right? That was a mission that Yechezkel was told to do. Okay, so it's not surprising. If you get prophecy, you might expect all kinds of interesting missions. So Hashem tells you, "You know what? Instead of going to shul today to learn, which is what you planned on doing, I have a different mission to you. I want you to go down to the Merkaz, here in Amat Beit Shemesh Aleph. I want you to circle it 7 times. Now, if you were told that by Hashem, no doubt in my mind that you would go down to that Merkaz, you would walk around it 7 times in utmost solemnity, with a real sense of mission, with a real sense that you're accomplishing something very great. Oh, but it's getting in the way of everything you had planned for the day. But now you understand that you were charged with a greater plan. Hashem is telling you, I have something else in mind for you. Hashem himself is telling you that, you know, that that is more important, more significant, more of an achievement than anything you would have done yourself. The truth is that the Rebbe was conveying to his Hasidim, there is no such thing as an inconvenience in life. There's no such thing as an impediment. When you understand that everything in life is actually a directive from Hashem, it's a call from Hashem, it's a challenge from Hashem. Here is something that I have in mind for you, tailor-made for you. You understand that it's a means to grow. It's a means to grow closer to Hashem. It's a means of accomplishment. In fact, even more than that, like the Rambam says, we live in this world surrounded by opportunity to do mitzvahs. Mitzvahs are cheap in this world. But it would be worthwhile for a person to come into this world just in order to fulfill one mitzvah. So yes, it would be worthwhile to come into this world for one directive of Hashem. Now, when you do relate this way to anything that comes your way, if you do relate this way with that realization that this is all a mission, anything that happens to you, anything that comes up in life is Hashem sending something to you and telling you, here, this is a challenge from me, I want you to respond right. Then everything turns into a mitzvah. Every action in life can become a mitzvah. And again, a mitzvah. I grew up with the term mitzvah. The mitzvah, the word mitzvah doesn't mean much to us, right? When we're trying to break up a fight between our kids, we tell them, oh, just give in to the other one, you get a mitzvah, right? We throw around the word term mitzvah cheaply. But mitzvah means, what does the word mitzvah mean? Let's just explain what the word mitzvah means. Mitzvah is from the word tzav. Tzav, we generally translate as command. But actually, the word tzav, in modern Hebrew, tzav, tzevet means a company, a staff. That's what tzevet means. What's the connection between that and the word command? Tzav, as in connection. Staff means a team working together. When one person commands another to do something, what it means is, I need you for something. I need a relationship with you. If you command your cleaning woman to wash the floor, you require the relationship with her. Why? Because you want your house clean. It's not really a lot of profundity to that relationship. But when we understand that Hashem doesn't need any of our actions, and yet Hashem is commanding us to do something, why is He commanding us to do it? The answer is, it's simply because Hashem is saying, I want to interact with you. I want you to interact with me. I want you to relate to me. Therefore, I'm asking you to do something for me, because you doing something for me means a lot to me. It's kind of similar to the parent who asks his child to do something. Not because he needs the kid to do it. He can do it faster himself. But it's because he's trying to enhance the connection that he has with his child by training the child into an active relationship with him. So the word tzav is really meant to be understood as in connection. Any command of Hashem is actually a message that Hashem wants to connect to us. This is every mitzvah. Therefore, this gives a lot more significance to any birkas ha-mitzvahs that we make. We make a bracha before doing a mitzvah. We thank Hashem for giving us the mitzvah. What are we doing? Thank Hashem for giving us a mitzvah. Simply understood, to the superficial person, a mitzvah is a duty. You don't thank the duties. I gotta do what I gotta do. But no, when you understand what a mitzvah is, you understand that through that mitzvah Hashem is saying, I'm interested in a connection with you. I want a relationship with you. So before doing that mitzvah, you contemplate that for a minute and you say, you should be overwhelmed by that and say, wow, you're interested in me? You gave me a mitzvah? Because you want a connection with me? Thank Hashem for that. You say a bracha, you thank Hashem for the mitzvah. If we understand that that's what a mitzvah is, let's expand that to anything that comes our way in life. Everything about life can be a mitzvah in this sense, because bitachon is a mitzvah saseh d'oraisa, and the realization that anything that comes your way is being sent to you by Hashem as a means of growing closer to Him. you are fulfilling that mitzvah of bitachon. Bitachon means that trust, that faith, that I know that He's conducting all of my affairs, and that anything that comes my way is sent by Him. Nobody else can influence my life in any way. Anything that comes my way is being done by Him, and is therefore a call from Him to recognize that it's Him, and to connect to Him through whatever it is. And therefore, yes, when you can't find your shoe in the morning, and it's greatly going to inconvenience you, now it's going to put you out, understand that Hashem is simply calling to you and He's saying, wait, that's me holding you from getting your shoe. Realize that it's me and connect to me. So therefore, instead of, you know, stomping your leg or, you know, grinding your teeth and saying, oh boy, and trying to figure out if maybe it is your spouse's fault, so at least there's someone you can yell at, you stop for a minute and you say, hear Hashem's call to you, and you say, oh, Hashem, I understand that you're sending this my way. And therefore, I'm going to utilize this opportunity. I'm going to utilize this inconvenience of saying, oh, Hashem, this is what you want? I'm accepting it. I'm accepting it because I know that you have my interests in heart and you're doing this for me. What does this have to do with chayrus? What does this have to do with chayrus? With freedom? The answer is really, this is the deepest understanding of what freedom really is. Because, again, like we said, in the material world, a person depends on all kinds of external factors. A person is free from slavery, but he's still not truly free. Free means that you're free to get wherever you want. You're free to do whatever you want. You're free to achieve whatever you want. Yeah, you're free from slavery, but now you have to slave away in order to make ends meet at the end of the month. So how free are you? Right? You're dying to live a little more comfortably. You're dying to be able to take it easy a little bit, but you can't. You have to put bread on the table. And parnassah isn't coming easy. This is just one example. There are plenty of other examples. So how free are you? How much are you at your own disposal? How much are you really able to get out of life what you want? So sure, you're free from slavery, because nobody is actually holding a whip over you. But are you really free? But once you develop the mentality that we discussed before, we understand that you are absolutely free. There is nothing that can hold you back from the greatest forms of achievement. Once you recognize your connection with Hashem and your spirituality as the ultimate achievement of this world, once you realize that everything about this world is really just the means of growing closer to Hashem, really just the means of getting to Olam Haba, connecting with Hashem, all of a sudden you're a truly free man, because there is nothing in life that can hold you back from that. Absolutely nothing. You don't depend on any circumstances, because any circumstance that you're in was orchestrated by Hashem. For what? In order to provide you with an opportunity for more spiritual success. So now we go back to coming out of Mitzrayim. What happened when we came out of Mitzrayim? We were just taken out of bondage, that's all? No. That's it? Now we're free to go? No. Leaving Mitzrayim was so much more than that. And this we indicate by beginning immediately after we leave Mitzrayim, we begin counting the Omer, we begin counting. One day to another day. What are we showing by counting? We're showing, who counts days? Someone who has a very, very momentous occasion ahead of them. And they're looking forward. They can't wait. They're busy counting down the days. I remember the first time in my life when I was a kid. We had cousins living in Los Angeles. I lived in New York. We had cousins living in Los Angeles. And we always talked about the time that I would go to Los Angeles. It was like in a dream. Then my turn came. I was going to be the kid who was going to go to Los Angeles to the next Simcha. And from about, I don't know how long it was before it was, I made myself a Sefira chart, a calendar. I crossed off each day, counting down the days until he comes. That's what we're doing when we're counting Sefira. We're showing that, no, there's actually something deeper to the fact that we went out of Mitzrayim. Going out of Mitzrayim was moving on to a sphere where we are now connected to Hashem, connected to spirituality, and we're starting life on a new plane. Let me explain what this means. Starting life on a new plane. By the way, I'll just note that this works very nicely. Sefer HaChinuch explains the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer. He says, why do we count Sfir? He basically says everything I just described. But the purpose of Sfiras HaOmer is that we're showing that we understand that we came out of Mitzrayim to that much deeper level in order to marry Hashem at Har Sinai. And he says, and therefore we count the days to show that we look forward to it, like, listen what he says, not like a kala waiting for a chasana. He says, like a slave waiting for freedom. We just got out of Mitzrayim, yet we're counting down the days to Matan Torah, because, like a slave waiting for freedom, we haven't really achieved our true freedom until we get to Torah, which is when we actually plug into Hashem. Because what is that freedom? That freedom is, after Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim to make us His people, He moved us to a plane, He moved us to a level where now we are Olam Haba people, we are Hashem people, we are above the material world. Our definition of success is not material success anymore. It's not wealth, it's not power on the national level, it's not anything else. It is getting close to Hashem. Once we're on this plane where everything about life is getting close to Hashem, we are the ultimate free people, because everything in life is an opportunity to grow closer to Hashem. And therefore, for the Jew, even death is an opportunity for growth, right? For anybody else, death is the end of everything. Death is the ultimate failure. But death is where it all ends. It's the extreme opposite of freedom. A bondage conflicts with freedom to an extent. Death is the complete opposite of freedom. What can you do once you're dead? But a Jew can achieve in death also, and therefore, yes, throughout all the generations, and the truth is, Sfira is also commemorating death. Throughout all the generations, Jews embraced death while in order to retain their relationship with Hashem. Why? Because even death is an opportunity. Everything is an opportunity, and therefore, the Jew is the ultimate free man. And this is therefore what we say. They'll go back to that title of the book. I don't know if they were thinking of all this when they named their book The Unconquerable Spirit. But it's such an apt title. Because, once again, you take a person, average person. Person's going to be locked up in jail. I want to live fine. Person's going to be sent to Siberia. Or locked away in a camp. For years. For decades. Listen, those are wasted years of life. But those years are failure. That portion of life is cut out of life. There's no achievement. There's no enjoyment. There's no success. With a Jew, that's not the case. A Jew can't be conquered. When a Jew is living on that plane, where it's just about me and Hashem, and the entire material world, with all of its different elements, are just means of growing closer to Hashem, that's not either true. The Jew soars free, even in prison, even when he's tortured, even when he's in prison, even Rahman al-Tzlan in a camp. When he realizes that he sees in all these things, calls from Hashem, now of course, I can say these things, they're easy for me to say. But we do know people. I know people. Everybody here, I'm sure, knows people. Who, yes, they came away from these experiences. Greater people, grown people, and for them, these were not wasted years at all. These were years of growing closer to Hashem. In fact, I said, I can't say these things. But my wife heard from someone who could. My wife was a student of the Yavne Seminary in Cleveland. The Yavne Seminary in Cleveland is headed by a woman named Rebbetzin Ozband. She is the daughter of Rabbi Avraham Yitzchak Bloch, who was the last Rav of Telz in Lithuania. She was a teenager. She was actually, maybe she was already 20. She was an older youth when the Nazis invaded Lithuania. And she saw her father shot to death. It's a story in and of itself. We're not going to spend the time on that now. And she spent basically the rest of the years of the war in the camps. Recently they had a Yavne reunion in Yerushalayim. My wife was there, and she said that Rebbetzin Ozband spoke to decades of graduates. And she said, I know this is going to be hard for you to connect to what I'm about to say, but I want to tell you that in the camps we were happy people. We were happy people because we had a sense of mission, and we knew what we were representing when we were there. Now, it's true, I can't relate to that. Everything that I'm saying here is, yeah, I'm saying these things, okay, understanding, I do understand it intellectually, but to be able to really say that I can relate to these things, no. I'm a kid who never had to go through these things. And I don't know if I'm made out of this stuff that these people were made out of. But this is the profundity behind that title of the Sefer, of the book, The Unconquerable Spirit. It's unconquerable. These people were free in those terrible years. They were free and they were succeeding and they were achieving very, very great things. Those weren't wasted years at all. And those were years that, on the contrary, when they actually left the camps, these years served as the baseboard, as a springboard for everything they went on to achieve later in life. So, is there any way to really limit these people? Is there any way to subjugate these people? No. The spirit is unconquerable. When a person goes through life realizing I'm on a higher plane than the material world, because I'm connected to Hashem, because Hashem took me as His people, or as His person, then everything about life is just about connecting to Hashem. Nothing at all can stop me from that. It's all about just trying to see, what is Hashem, what is the call, what is the challenge in this case? What is Hashem's call in that case? Okay, so I was giving some extreme examples, but the truth is that this is true in the nitty gritty of our lives also. We don't have to wait. We don't have to wait to be in such circumstances in order to really feel freedom. But we have to understand that we should enjoy freedom and utilize freedom every moment of the day. Because we should start relating to all of the so-called impediments of life. Of course, when you have the day clear and when you're able to do what you want, sure, it's up to you to just go ahead and achieve spiritually. But let's say a person says, you know what, it's not true. I am not really free to achieve spiritually. Why? I have to work. I know, right? And my neighbor is a Koyl man. He's all day in Koyl. I didn't grow up that way. I don't have the opportunities, and therefore I am more spiritually limited than he is. But once again, 1 minute. Who set up that situation? You have to work. That's why I have to work very hard, okay? You struggle for a parnasa. You run around juggling 5 jobs. And you do a morning shift in one place. You begin at 4 and you end at 8. And you're running from place to place. And you come home at night and you drop into bed at 11 o'clock, completely exhausted. So I'm limited. How much can I already dedicate to my spirituality? No, you're not limited. It's just an issue of thinking to yourself. These are all calls from Hashem. These are all opportunities for me. What does Hashem want from me? How am I supposed to interpret His call? So on the most basic level, this is something that's across the board, no matter what circumstance you're in.
Would you
escape? I'll save it for the end. I want to save questions for the end. But hold on to your question. We'll want to hear it. I'm going to dedicate some time at the end. Okay? So the only question is one across the board understanding of all these things. The most basic understanding, whether you're being held up by this circumstance or that circumstance, or whether you're facing this challenge or that challenge. The number one way of making a success out of it is the very fact that you acknowledge, this has been given to me by Hashem, and therefore I am embracing it willingly. This doesn't mean, by the way, that you can't try to alleviate challenging situations. Fine. But in as much as you are in that situation, in as much as you didn't manage to change it, instead of fretting and stomping your foot, say, this Hashem is setting up for me. This is Hashem's customized plan for my success in this world. And therefore, I'm going to embrace it. That very realization is already turning it into a commodity worth millions. You've turned that impediment, you've turned that challenge, you've turned that problem into eternal success. Into millions. Now, take this a step further. This applies to everything in life. Every challenge in life. A person says, I have a very challenging family, spouse, child, whatever it is. You have to realize that all these things also, you have to switch the term challenge for opportunity.
Because that's really what everything is. It was a story of a fellow who was a kiruv rov somewhere in the United States, and he managed to get close with a young man, young, completely irreligious young man. He was drawing him closer to Judaism, and this person was making strides, and he was basically ready to really start committing himself. But there was one major obstacle, and that is that he was engaged to a non-Jewish girl, and that's certainly an impediment. And this Rav was very close to him, was using all the techniques. He read all the books, how to stop an intermarriage, whatever it is. He tried everything, nothing was working. This person just couldn't get over it. He really loved this girl deeply, and it was a problem. He was torn. He liked Judaism. He wanted to take this step, but this was just something that he was holding him back, and he wasn't going to manage it. So this rabbi decided he's going to take him to his Rebbe. Lubavitcher Rebbe. Take him to his Rebbe. He took him to the Rebbe. The way it worked there was that there's a long line, and about you're generously granted about 5 seconds as you pass by, and after that you basically shoved ahead. So they wanted to present the whole problem in those 5 seconds. So as he got to the head of the line, he basically tells the Rebbe, "I have a problem. You know, I would like to become frum, but I have a non-Jewish fiance, and I don't know what to do. I'm so torn." So the Rebbe told him in those few seconds, "I'm jealous of you." The guy looked at him. Well, he really doesn't have a special fiance, but I didn't think the Rebbe would be jealous of that. So he said, "I'm jealous of you." He looked at the Rebbe, and the Rebbe said, "I was never given an opportunity of this magnitude to prove my loyalty to Hashem." Change the word. The word becomes from challenge into opportunity, into springboard, into a catapult for success. Every challenge is like that. Instead of, whenever you face challenges, instead of just locking yourself into the fact that now I have a challenge, say, "I have an opportunity ahead of me." So the question is, how do I utilize this opportunity? So number one is, like we said, acknowledging. This is from Hashem. You acknowledge that and you say, "Okay, I'm going to deal with it. I'm accepting it and I'm going to deal with it." There, you've already succeeded. But then, you can take the next step and try to figure out, where is the growth? Where are the more specific opportunities for growth that every last situation in life involves? Everything in life is an opportunity for growth. Nothing is an obstacle to growth. Everything is just an opportunity. And therefore, if it's a challenging person in your life, stop viewing it as just a challenge. See this person as my means to greatness. There's a funny story about that. But it's even though I doubt that the one who told this story, it's a joke, meant it, there's actually a lot of depth to it. There was a fellow who went to Oshir, and he heard that a person who has a bad wife is guaranteed Olam Haba. Any woman who has a bad husband and any husband who has a bad wife can identify, right? A person who has a bad wife is guaranteed Olam Haba. The guy came away inspired. Such an easy ticket to Olam Haba. He's going to go and find the ultimate bad wife. He started making inquiries, right? He put himself up on shidduch lists. He put down all the qualifications he wants, right? Mean, nasty, ugly, etc. Okay. Shadchan calls, he's got a shidduch for him. This is the meanest woman who ever walked the face of this earth. Look, he's going to put all her eggs in his he's going to put all his eggs in her basket. He wants to be sure that he's got the right woman. Started making phone calls. It's okay, her reputation went ahead of her. Wherever he inquired, heard everybody just cursing. "This is the right woman for me." Okay? He marries her. And she treats him like a king. The day after the chasana, he comes back from shul. There's a royal breakfast waiting for him at the table. And she's just sitting there with adoring eyes, ready to jump at his every wish. He figures, okay, she just got married. We'll give her time to get into it. But a month, 2 months, 3 months went by and to his dismay, life with Torah was bliss. What's he going to do? His dreams are being shattered. So finally he sits down and he says, listen, honey, we have to talk. I was misled. I was told that you were the witch of the generation. What's going on here? You're not living up to your reputation. So she told him, I know. You thought you were going to get to Olam Haba through me, huh? No. I'm going to get you to Gehenna. All right. So this isn't a bad joke, but even better than a joke is a very, very deep truth here. When we have a tough person in our life, we really do have to view it the way this person viewed it. No, don't go looking for that when you're in Shidduchim. But if you feel that you have challenges, this is the way to view it. This person is a means to my greatness. Now, by the way, I'll note that often when you will start viewing this way and responding in kind, you'll find that that person is going to start becoming a little more like the wife in that joke. Right? But don't worry. You can still gain Olam Haba with a pleasant wife too. But the point is that yes, you have to realize that any challenge in life, a challenging person in life, challenging circumstances in life, switch the word challenge for opportunity. Switch the word challenge for mission. This is your customized mission that Hashem has mapped out for you from before you were born. Not only before you were born, but from the beginning of time. And if you have a chas v'shalom, a good spouse, oh, that's also an opportunity. That's also a challenge. You have a good spouse, or you have good circumstances, make the most of it. In general, the Chazon Ish tells us, any encounter with a person is a gold mine. Every time you encounter a person, we're encountering people all throughout the day. The Chazon Ish says that you have a person, we have a person who really understands chesed. Every time he meets a person, he views that as an opportunity. And whenever he meets a person, whether he's talking about a child, a spouse, your husband, your wife, who you're going to be spending the whole day with, a lot of time with, or whether it's just a brief encounter, you're passing by somebody on the way out of shul, you're meeting somebody in the grocery, the Chazon Ish says, this person's thoughts immediately are, how can I make the most out of my meeting with this person? Or in other words, what can I do to make this person come away from his encounter with me with the most pleasant feeling? Now this is something that, yes, when you're dealing with a family member, it's a bit more long term. But also, when you're dealing with people around you, you're seeing in a brief way, a little bit of thought, every small exchange, you can throw in a little bit of a good word, a little bit of mental exercise, and you can mamish every meeting that you have with a person can be a gold mine. You can be making millions right and left. A good word here, a good morning there, a nice smile there, a pat on the back. You don't know what that can do for a person. Finding something nice to say about a person. People appreciate honest praise because it's not given out easily. But thinking for a little bit, what nice thing can I say to this person about themselves? These are opportunities. And therefore, what we call tests, right? We have our picture of how ideal life should look. Tests are things that get in the way, right? Life is supposed to be a straight road. And here and there, tests come along, and you gotta get by them. But no, just start viewing it a little differently. When life is straight, okay, then you are trying to figure out your own spiritual roadmap. When you're tested, when things are coming your way that you didn't plan, when you're put into circumstances, when you're faced in challenges, that's a much greater opportunity for your own spiritual achievement. Why? Because this is not you mapping your own spiritual map. It's Hashem presenting His customized plan for your spiritual success. And therefore, circumstance, coincidence, chance, these are words that don't really exist in our lexicon. All these things we're going to interpret as calls from Hashem, missions. You learn to hear the voice of Hashem in all these things. This is really what Chazal meant when they said, "Ein lecha ben chayrin ela misha isek batayrin." The only person who's a true ben chayrin, who's a truly free person, is a person who's connected to Torah. Why? Because as long as you're not connected to Torah, All kinds of things get in your way. Life is full of impediments and tribulations. Once you are connected to Torah, you're a free bird. You're always flying high. Everything is an opportunity to soar. That's freedom. That's freedom when nothing at all in life can hold you back from success. When everything in life is achieving what you want to get out of life. That's real freedom. And that's why the word, what is the word test in Hebrew? Nisayan. Right? Nisayan, again, we often use that with a negative connotation. Ah, you know, sometimes you're tested. But Nisayan, as Avigdor Miller pointed out, is from the word Nes. Nes is a banner. It's a banner. Every time you're handed a Nisayan, what you're actually being handed is, you're handed a test, you're being handed a banner. Take that test and raise it aloft as a sign of your greatness. Every test, what Hashem is saying, is really a chance, a springboard, a chance for you to establish yourself as a greater person. Put yourself on a pedestal. Raise a banner of who you are. This is the freedom that we gained. And this is why we understand that, yeah, the whole purpose of Pesach is because Hashem put us onto a higher plane, a plane where we are above depending on materialism. Every aspect of material life is really just a means of achieving. That's the ultimate freedom. So, these are the things that we should be focusing on, specifically in the days of Sfiras HaEmor, because Sfiras HaEmor is when we have this focus, that the whole purpose of going out of Mitzrayim was in order to get that connection to Hashem, because that's what really establishes us as free people. It establishes us as permanently free people, always free people, where every last aspect of life is just freedom. There are no impediments, no obstacles. It's all about opportunity for eternal success. Okay, now we'll take questions first on the subject, and if anybody wants to submit questions on any subject to be addressed in next week, Bezal Hashem, you can do so.
Why is there such a thing as divorce, giving a get, a mitzvah to give a get, if you can look at marriage like this is my mission, I'm serving Hashem?
Why is there such a thing as divorce, according to what we just said, that every problem in life is actually a means for success? That's a question that has to be addressed in a broad way. But I'll answer the question in two ways. First of all, let's ask a different question. Why are there doctors if the illness is an opportunity for success? And an illness is an opportunity for success. We've seen people grow great through illnesses. And even an ordinary strep throat, which is not going to turn you into a completely newly inspired person, is also a means of success. Like we said, you acknowledge that was sent to you by Hashem and you embrace it willingly. That strep throat is growth. Why are there doctors? And the answer is that, like we said before, and this is a bit of a fine line which people find confusing, but it isn't really confusing. Embracing what Hashem sends to you does not conflict with trying to alleviate the situation. You can try to alleviate the situation while at the same time, whatever you are going through, to accept willingly. And this is the answer to the general concept of Ishtablis. Right now I have no money. Why should I try to make money? Shouldn't I view it as an opportunity? As long as you don't have the money, right? As long as you're not making ends meet, yes, view that as a challenge of Hashem and saying, I understand that you're putting me through this. But keep on checking the classifieds and look for a job and try to get a job. In fact, part of the challenge is Hashem wants us to try to alleviate our suffering. But, and here we have to get on to another level, and we must stress that the truth is that today divorce is thrown around a little bit too easily, because people want things to be easy. Divorce is something that the Torah did put in that mechanism when it needs to be used. But certainly, the initial approach should be that this is a challenge that I have to meet. And by working at it properly, and you have to have the right guidance, and it's not an easy thing, it can be a means of growth. And in fact, many couples who went through difficult, trying times, but decided they were going to work with it, work hard through it, and make it, grew much closer than other couples. and had a much deeper level of love than other couples. There is no question about it. The initial response to having a tough relationship, and therefore the truth is that when we say a lousy spouse, that's really a misnomer. Generally, you can't be quick to attribute problems in a marriage to a bad spouse, or to yourself being a bad spouse. Usually, all you have to say is, we have a difficult marriage. We have a challenging marriage. That's a challenge that's meant to be met. Now, in earlier times, people were slower to jump on the mechanism of divorce because, in general, there was more of an attitude that good things come through hard work. Today, in a big way, in the modern generation, that's been forgotten. There's instant coffee and there's instant happiness, and that's what I want to have. It doesn't work immediately, and that's why in the big world, in the world out there, right, people are getting married and divorced at a dizzying rate. I'm talking about the outside world, but that's affecting us also. Because, you know, you get married because it's exciting at first glance, and then it stops being exciting, like Victor Miller used to say. The best way to stop a romance is marriage. So, after you're married for a couple of weeks, it stops being exciting, then it becomes boring. Oh, this is not what we had in mind. Let's drop each other and try something else. It'll be exciting for another couple of weeks. To understand that good things come through hard work is something that has to be stressed nowadays. So therefore, again, it's that fine line. We have to say that, yes, the Torah does put that mechanism of divorce into the Torah because the Torah is more pragmatic than Catholicism. But still, that does not mean that it's something that is to be jumped on. Certainly. You have to view it as a challenge, and it should be worked at, and see, is this an opportunity for growth? This is obviously something that has to be elaborated upon at great length, and it also has to be qualified at great length. This is obviously a delicate subject, and there's obviously no way of putting down absolute rules for all circumstances. But what we can say, in a broad way, is that, yes, we do have to approach the challenges of life as things that are meant to be dealt with. We have to realize that good things come through hard work. Achievement comes through hard work, and not to be quick to utilize that mechanism of divorce. So again, bottom line answer to your question is yes, divorce is in the Torah because when it's needed, it certainly is needed. But it's certainly not meant to be used as the top of the pile, as the immediate solution. The contrary, real relationships are built through a lot of work. When people just have an easy relationship automatically, often there isn't much substance to it. Real relationships are built through work. Anything else? Okay, then I believe we're finished for this week. If people want to submit questions throughout the week, you can take my email address. It's chanaj@actcom.net.il, and we will be neither try to address questions at the end of the shiur in the subsequent week. Good night.